You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thursday edition, Locked On NBA. David Locke along with Ben Golliver. It's your daily NBA podcast. 30 minutes every day to run through last night's game, give you all the latest insight, and tell you what happened in the NBA and what is happening in the NBA. And we're joined by Washington Post national NBA columnist Ben Golliver. Every Thursday, I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, host of Locked On Jazz. Ben, we're going to run through at least six of the 12 games, not the 13th, because that one didn't happen, around the NBA. But let me start with that 13th. Just what's your thoughts on the fact that the Rockets and Oklahoma City Thunder get canceled tonight and don't happen?
No, we're like perfectly in sync. I was going to say we had some crazy games to discuss, but the biggest news was the one that didn't happen, right? I think ultimately James Harden's decision to go to the club, he admitted that he went there a couple nights before their opening night game, gave the NBA no choice but to fine him and to basically not clear him for that game. You look at the other situation, totally separate from Harden. You had a number of players either test positive or return inconclusive tests, which puts them in a situation where obviously they can't play. And then the NBA went about its contact tracing program, which is something that we didn't have to see them do in the bubble because there was never a positive test in the bubble. But clearly they determined that there was a number of players on top of that initial group who had been in close contact with them in kind of an extended format. And so all of their ability, availabilities got put into question. So I think ultimately the decision was made to err on the side of caution because Houston simply didn't have enough players to field the eight-man requirement to hold that game. But I think it's a little bit of a wary start for the league. I think you combine that with Golden State's blowout loss on Tuesday night and the Lakers kind of sleepwalking and getting their rings in an empty building. I think it was kind of a tough opening 24 hours for the NBA, and I'm sure they're happy to see lots of entertaining action on Wednesday night to maybe help them change the story a little bit.
I'm going to play fan here instead of reporter because I think the fans want to hear about the action. So let's go to it. On our pregame show on Utah Jazz TV, we had to choose who our MVP would be this year. I took a surprise pick. I think Jason Tatum could line up to be MVP this year. I love, without Kemba or whatever his knee problem is, without Gordon Hayward, that team's going to be turned over to he and Jaylen Brown. I actually think that's going to be good for Boston. I feel like they've had too many chefs in the kitchen for the last few years. Everyone's been fighting for possessions. No one's been happy. And now they have an opportunity, and they end up beating Boston on a wild bank shot by Jason Tatum. What do you see in this one tonight?
Well, I mean, Tatum just scores so easily. I think that's the main takeaway. I would say he didn't call bank on the game winner. When it left his hand the first time, I thought it was just way off, and it kissed it absolutely perfectly. So we'll give him credit for the shooter's carom there. But I think the real weapon that he's got is not only the off-the-dribble three, but the recognition of when to step in and take it right there on that three-point line. He doesn't have to go three steps behind. If he can get the right switch in a pick-and-roll, or if he can manipulate the matchup properly, he gets himself into really high percentage looks that he's just great at hitting right off the step. And he did that a couple of times against Milwaukee. Obviously, anytime they're playing big, that shot's going to be there for him if they do it right. And so he was able to get that done. I think from Milwaukee's side, it was a really strange game. Like, they started off really well. Then they gave up a gigantic run. It seemed like they were out of it. And then they totally dominated the fourth quarter up until Tatum's three-point shot. They went small a lot in the fourth quarter, and the spacing was a little bit better around Giannis. You actually had kind of a signature moment for Jrue Holiday hitting a really clutch three in the corner. It felt like this was going to be the storyline of, oh, Milwaukee's offseason pays off. And instead, Tatum hits that miracle shot. And then in a really crazy sequence late, with 0.4 seconds left, Milwaukee inbounds the ball trying to get a lob to Giannis. But there's a foul called on the play, sending Giannis to the line down two. He makes the first one and misses the second one. He's had so many troubles at the free throw line. You could just imagine it's like going through his head. He's probably staying up all night thinking about that miss. And I guess to spin this forward, if I was the Golden State Warriors needing to play Giannis on Christmas, I would already be really nervous. They don't have a lot of interior defense. Giannis is going to be coming like a man on a mission. I'm going to predict it right now, Locke, 40 points for Giannis on Christmas in a win.
Well, he had 35. The thing on Tatum's line, 13 three attempts. You know, that's where this game is going. He's so tall and so long, as you said, he can get it off. He's one of five guys who shot 40% on off-the-bounce threes last year. The only concern, no free throw attempts for him, but he has 30. Jaylen Brown has 33. Boston got a lot out of Jeff Teague in that one in the 122-121 win over Milwaukee. Philadelphia gets their first win under Doc Rivers, 113-107. There's a lot of interesting things here, too. I'm going to the losing side. Russell Westbrook, triple-double, 21 points, 11 rebounds, 15 assists. But it's the Russell Westbrook, 9 of 22 to get his 21 points. He was plus 10 tonight. Their lack of depth was probably the bigger problem there.
No, I think the Wizards broadcast got the full Russell Westbrook experience. You know, he got that triple-double, and they put it up. They flashed the graphic, you know, most career triple-doubles, and Westbrook's up there with Oscar Robertson, and he's above Magic Johnson. And then as they're showing that graphic, Locke, I kid you not, he airballs a three-pointer on the next possession while the graphic's still on the screen. So a little bit of the good, the bad, and the ugly from Russell Westbrook. Washington actually had really good spirit and camaraderie about themselves for almost the entire game, but it was one of those classic games where, like, the younger team, quote-unquote, or the less experienced team just gets picked apart late by a team that does, you know, knows itself a little bit better and is more comfortable in that moment. Obviously, Westbrook and Beal are not young, but the other players that Washington kind of had to close with, guys like Isaac Bonga, you know, Thomas Bryant, I mean, he's no match for Joel Embiid inside. And so you actually saw Philadelphia do a nice job of attacking the interior of Washington's defense and really scoring at will there to kind of turn that game late. It was kind of a shaky performance early for Philadelphia. Their body language wasn't great, but they turned it around and kind of pulled that victory out. And they should. I mean, they're the more talented team, and I think the more experienced team as well. With the lineups for Philly, though, I mean, so much focus has been on the spacing and, you know, adding shooters to the lineup. What I like with their closing group was that they had both Shake Milton and Seth Curry on the courts, two ball handlers, two guys who could do a little bit off the dribble. Both those guys had some key moments there for them late. So it wasn't just about Ben Simmons trying to, like, attack a wall defense or anything like that. It was much more creative and, you know, just different options for Philadelphia. So I think they're going home happy they got the W, not feeling like they played particularly well. And Washington's probably feeling like, hey, we could chalk this one up as, you know, almost a moral victory.
40-point fourth quarter carries the way for Philadelphia. Shake Milton, you mentioned him, plus 33. So that'll work for you. I'm so curious about this rookie class this year. Not only was it without stars, but the talking to people around the league and having been in the league for 25-plus years now, the process that a rookie goes through when they finish their season in March, they start working out with trainers that are specifically NBA related. Then starting in April and May, they start going to NBA camps and NBA workouts. And when they're in those NBA workouts, they're actually getting instructed, like, this is how we guard the pick and roll. This is how we do this. Let's work on catch and shoot. And they're actually getting coached in those sessions. I've been to them. They're incredible to watch. And, you know, hey, we're going to go on pick and roll coverage. We're going over on this. We're going under on this. You're hedging on. Like, the coaches work with them to see if they can do it, also to see if they can take instruction. None of those guys got that. Then they usually get a two-week training camp for summer league. Then they get a two-week summer league. They didn't get that. Then they get a break for August, and they come back in September, and they usually go to camp early September, sometimes late August, for a month before camp starts, either working individually with coaches or playing pickup with the other guys on the team, and then they start training camp for 3 weeks. They got none of that this year. I'm stunned if any of these young players are all ready to play this year, particularly on teams that need it. And the one thing about Denny Avdija was that he was older than everyone else and had played with adults, and I didn't see the game. Did you see enough of him to see whether he could hold his own tonight?
Well, he looked comfortable on the court. I mean, he's also a high-skilled player who is just an all-around. I think he's a coach's kid as well. I mean, he just looks like he's comfortable in any environment. You can kind of throw him to the wolves, and he'll be okay. So I think that was sort of the vibe. I'm not saying he, like, jumped out of the game or anything. I mean, it was definitely dominated by Westbrook and Beal like you would expect, and I think that's going to be Washington's deal. When one of those guys comes off the court, they're not nearly as good, especially when Beal comes off. You know, it just turns in a little bit too much of the Westbrook show for me. Bertans gave them some good minutes. I think part of the problem with their closing lineup, apparently he's on a minutes restriction still. And, of course, they lost Rui Hachimura to this weird illness that's only a couple weeks, so he'll be back as well. And he'll probably be in a closing role for them too. So their rotation was a little bit stretched. I think the one benefit, I'm with you completely on the rookie thing because, I mean, they're usually accustomed to, what, like 5, 6, 7 months of training before they actually have to hit a game. And here they're really getting, what, like 3 weeks of training before they have to hit the game. we're seeing some teams just not play their vets as many minutes maybe as we would have expected, whether they're coming off of a short turnaround or not. They might be trying to manage the schedule a little bit. So that could just create more playing time opportunities for those guys, a little bit maybe of a looser leash for them to learn on the fly. And that could be beneficial to their development. I've already heard a number of coaches talk about, hey, we want to go 10, 11, 12 guys deep. I was watching the Suns tonight. Their game's wrapping up right now. Chris Paul actually didn't play that many minutes, not nearly as many as I thought he would. So, you know, those kinds of things could help the rookies a little bit balance out, perhaps.
Interesting. And in that Charlotte-Cleveland game, which had two of the bigger draft picks, LaMelo Ball played 16 minutes. He went 0 for 5, did not score. He had a rebound and 3 assists and 2 steals. Isaac Okoro, who's physically a marvel, if you haven't seen him, he's an incredible physical player, had 11 points, 3 rebounds, and 5 assists for Cleveland in 34 minutes. So that's a big statement there from them. All right, we'll continue to look at the rest of the games. The Pelicans and the Raptors played a good one. The Timberwolves got a nice win against the Pistons, and the Kings and the Nuggets went down to the end. The Mavericks and the Suns having a good one, and the Jazz blew out the Blazers with a basketball that did not look like something that you're used to out of the Utah Jazz, more like the Houston Rockets. We'll touch on all of those as we continue. Today's show is brought to you by the sponsor of our new show, Locked On Bets, a daily podcast on the betting lines and what's taking place, 10 to 15 minutes every day, quick hitting, fast, and it's all brought to you by BetOnline.ag. So there's only one place that has you covered, one place we trust. It's BetOnline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at BetOnline.ag. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off your welcome bonus. Then tune into your boy Q and Lee Sterling with Locked On Bets and see what his locks of the day are, his wrong team favored. Find out what he's got for the blowout special, whether it's one of the NFL games of the week, the college games are going on with the bowl games, and the NBA is underway. So get in on the action, and don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. That's BetOnline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. You're a fantasy basketball player. Josh Lloyd's got Locked On Fantasy Basketball, top 20 NBA or top 20 sports show available for you each and every day. Pelicans were my team that I think's the underrated team. I'm kind of staking my claim on the Pelicans a little bit here. They went in and blew out Toronto in Tampa, or didn't blow them out, but beat them pretty handily, 113-99. They got 23 from J.J. Redick. They got 24 from max contract Brandon Ingram, plus 9 rebounds, 11 assists. Stan Van Gundy's first game coaching there. What you see from the Pelicans, this is a team that all my metrics peaked out on, that this is a bona fide team. I actually had a Locked On NBA bold predictions the other day, Ben, and I said the Pelicans would be battling for home court advantage, not just making the playoffs.
Well, I think that the first game in, you're looking pretty good. The biggest thing that I saw was just the camaraderie factor, the togetherness that was not there in the bubble at all is there with this group. They have a really interesting mix of younger players and veterans. Sometimes those, you know, competing interests can clash, but, you know, from day one, it looks pretty good. I mean, you just see guys up on the bench cheering each other. They were in total command of that game late. It was not the Zion show, and I think that's important because there was so much hype and attention around Zion last year, and he got some numbers, but they really weren't running that much through him. You know, Ingram was kind of the main facilitator for them and the main scoring option for them, but it was just a really balanced and solid effort. They can put lineups on the court, you know, with four or five offensive threats at any given point. And they just played really hard and really together. So I think if you want to give Stan Van Gundy the credit, you can for that. Toronto was an interesting situation because they're basically forced to close small now because of the losses of Ibaka and Marcus Gasol as well. So they were pretty much closing with Siakam as the five. And that's a tough team to close small against, right? Because they had Adams in there to do a lot of interior damage, but then also Zion as well as a real physical force. I think that in that stylistic mismatch, at least on this night, New Orleans won that thing pretty handily. So it was all good vibes, and it's nice to see because those guys were so disappointing and just demoralized coming out of the bubble. They looked like a totally different team. Lonzo seemed like he was playing confidently. He's in a contract year, so he's a player to watch for them as well. Nothing really negative to say about the Pelicans opening night.
The book on the Pelicans coming into this was that they didn't have enough shooting or spacing. They took 42 of their 80 shots as threes.
Well, Lonzo's a great example of that. He's a better percentage shooter than you would think. Ingram has shown some progress over the course of his career. And then obviously Redick is just a walking three-point shot. So they've got some different guys who can shoot it. You know, to me, you know, whether or not they get up enough threes, it's more about how they manage the Zion Adams partnership, because there's going to be some lineups where, you know, those guys are just getting stretched out to death on defense, and, you know, Adams is struggling, and they're feeling like they're too big. But when they go to Zion at the five, you can keep three or four shooters around that group. And same thing is if you just have Adams on and no Zion, you can surround him with three or four shooters and do some pick and roll stuff as well. So, you know, to me, as long as those auxiliary guys shoot the ball well, and I'm really looking at Lonzo and Eric Bledsoe. I think those are two X factors for them. Those guys have to shoot the ball well, and their offense is going to look good.
I feel Eric Bledsoe has been so poor in the playoffs that it's tarnished how good a player he is the rest of the year. Like, he's really quite – last year was in tremendous. Like, you look up best isolation players, he's there. You look at best pick-and-roll players, he's there. You look at best handoff players, he's there. He was tremendous last year in the way he played. He just has not been a good playoff player. And so for the regular season, I just don't think they're dropping off that dramatically from what they got with Drew Holiday last year. And he might be a better defensive player.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely take Holiday in the regular season and in the playoffs, but your point is well taken. I mean, he was a totally different guy in the regular season to the playoffs, and the only version that anyone talks about, because it was the Milwaukee Bucks, and pretty much everybody skips their games until the playoffs anyways, the only version people talk about is the playoff version, and they had to move off of him because they need to get deeper in the playoffs. But if you're New Orleans, it's a great opportunity to buy low on a guy who really isn't, you know, on a night-to-night basis that much different than Holiday. And I think he just needs a situation where there's not quite as much expectations. Bledsoe's been real honest about some of the anxiety and the pressure that he's felt, and that he doesn't necessarily, you know, handle those things the best, and it can be distracting. And I think this is a fresh start for him, and that could help too. I mean, there's just no one's expecting that much of Bledsoe this season at all as an individual player. It's kind of like it's all gravy, right? You know, he's kind of playing with house money. And so from that standpoint, you know, it's a better fit for where he's at as a player.
Indiana beat the Knicks 121-107 because the Knicks are in the NBA. Actually, the only thing noticeable on that one, R.J. Barrett, who had a pretty terrible rookie year, 26 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists. It's worth remembering he was the number one recruit in the country out of high school coming out of Canada, not Zion Williamson. So maybe they finally found something there. Indiana, who's kind of been the forgotten team, Sabonis had 32, 13, and 5 tonight. They're trying to use him like Jokic with their new head coach. Victor Oladipo looked good with 22. Malcolm Brogdon, 21. I don't know if you got to see this game at all, but there have been more and more talk a little bit about the Indiana's become the forgotten team in the Eastern Conference. This is a team that's been top 4 or 5 each of the last few years. No one's picking them around there anymore. What's your thought on Indiana?
Yeah, I mean, they, to me, like, there was people who were saying, could they fall out of the playoff chase, or are they going to go down to like a 7 or 8 seed, or are they going to blow up over these locker room issues? And I never really got there. I thought that was a little bit too pessimistic. I mean, I think I still have a question: are they going to be able to win a playoff series, or is it going to be the same old Pacers? I'm not going to read too much into what kind of numbers guys can put up against the Knicks. I mean, you know, Tom Thibodeau is not going to fix that defense overnight, and they got a lot of pieces who just, you know, really can't guard. And you know, that goes for most of their starting lineup. I think from the Knicks standpoint, though, they would trade an entire season of, you know, like winning like roughly 20% of your games if that means that R.J. Barrett really has a breakout and he can actually be the guy, because at this point they need something to call a foundational player, and he's the best candidate on the roster. I mean, I think even if Obi Toppin turns into like the best version of himself, wins Rookie of the Year and all that kind of stuff, I still don't think you're going to view him as a franchise-type player. They really needed to be Barrett, and so I think he's off to a promising start. And I'm watching a lot of these second-year guys, too, Locke, for the same reason that you were talking about, you know, rookies and developmental timeline and all that. I mean, there's an awful lot of rookies who basically haven't played in the NBA since March, who had a lot of time to work on their game, and there's a lot of guys who take their game seriously during the offseason. So if you devoted like 8 or 9 months to your craft coming off of a rookie season, you should be a completely different player this year. And hopefully, I think for Knicks fans, that's what they want to see from Barrett.
Another interesting game today. Orlando beat Miami. I don't want to make too much of it. The only thing I think is worth keeping an eye on, and we'll slide through it, is keeping an eye whether teams whose rosters are basically the same as they were a year ago play well to start the year. Because of the short training camp, because of the familiarity, Orlando's virtually playing the same starting five, though Bacon's in that five compared to last year. But it's Terrence Ross off the bench. I mean, their top 6, 7 guys are all virtually the exact same. So that one's probably worth keeping an eye on. You actually watched Timberwolves Pistons. I admire you for this. What'd you see?
Well, I watched the stretch run. I just wanted to see how Minnesota would operate. Look, I mean, started off almost like a worst case scenario. I don't know if you saw this, but you know, D'Angelo Russell had some issue with his COVID testing, so they actually brought him off the bench rather than starting him for the season opener. And he's like this big hyped player for them. They're wanting to pair him with Cat, and you're just thinking like, oh no, this is like a nightmare start from the Timberwolves. But that really wasn't it. I mean, they hung tough the whole way. You know, Russell was able to hit a couple of big shots in the second half, and they got really balanced scoring from a lot of different places. One of those players I was talking about, a rookie who I wanted to see take a step forward from last year, is Jared Culver. Now, he didn't have the world's best game, but he gave them a little bit of, you know, a little bit of production off the bench too. I would hope that develops. I feel like he just didn't show anything his rookie year, and you would want to see something from him. But they're going to be pleased with Anthony Edwards' effort as well in his first game. But ultimately, this game came down to like a very emotional moment, you know, for Karl Anthony Towns. Like after the game, he kept the game ball. He dedicated the game to his mother, who obviously died of COVID complications back in April. And then he gave some comments after the game, which basically amounted to, you know, he feels like the man he was before her death is completely gone, and he's a completely different person. His soul has changed. I mean, it was very intense, deep, emotional stuff from Karl Anthony Towns. So I think, you know, for the Timberwolves, obviously they're playing with heavy hearts this year, but he played pretty well with a heavy heart. I mean, 22 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. I think you just tip your hat to that big guy. He's had a really tough year, and, you know, hopefully, you know, this just is one small step towards, you know, finding, I guess, a better peace of mind for him.
We'll wrap up the rest of the games, Portland and Utah. Utah blows them out, Mavericks and Suns, and we'll run through the others, and then we'll look a little bit ahead to some of the Christmas games with nothing happening tomorrow for anyone, as everyone is off on tomorrow's game. Today's show is brought to you in part by Blue Nile, brought to you in part by Built Go. Built Go got me through the day today, a little skiing, getting tired. Hit the wall. What do? I went to my Built Go that was in my pocket. It worked out great. You can put Built 1.5-ounce packages of Built Go. They put in your briefcase to get more focused, put it in a golf bag to get through the back nine, or put it in your inside pocket for a ski day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy without the crash. It's like drinking a monster drink, but a third of the caffeine. I add the chocolate coconut. There's also chocolate mint. You can have the peanut butter honey, but I'm not going to do that because I'm allergic to nuts. It's got collagen powder protein in it, fast absorbing, so it gets into your system fast, and it's easy on your stomach. Collagen promotes joint and soft tissue and hair and skin health. Go to BuiltGo.com. Use the promo code LOCKED. You'll get 20% off your next order. Promo code LOCKED for 20% off your next order. Go to BuiltGo.com. Let's go. Phoenix and Dallas. Phoenix gets the win 106-102. Those are two of the hot teams everyone wants to see in the East. Luka MVP campaign starts with 32-8-5. Chris Paul ends up playing 28 minutes. He has 8 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. What do you see in Dallas against Phoenix tonight?
Well, Phoenix looks steady and together, so I think they're going to be feeling very pleased that they were able to carry over some of the momentum from the bubble. I think they were feeling a lot of hype, and you obviously want to be able to, you know, deliver on that as quickly as possible, and maybe you feel a little bit of a relief feeling. Not if they had dropped this game, maybe they're feeling like, oh, you know, did we get ahead of ourselves or something like that. For Dallas, the story was Luka just starting really, really slow. He could not hit a shot early. He missed a series of layups just almost in comical fashion. He was holding his head. He was so frustrated. But what I love about Luka, even at his young age, he's always going to find a way to make a difference in the game. He bounced back and had a much better second half. I think for Phoenix, number one takeaway, I mean, they really limited Chris Paul's minutes. You know, 28 minutes is not a lot. I mean, it's a guy who was an all-star last year. I think they're going to bring him along slow, probably because of the turnaround from the bubble, and they're going to lean a little bit on their depth. Campaign played really well off the bench for them at point guard. That was kind of a question mark for me. What do they look like when Chris Paul is not on the court? And they were running their offense quite well, and they really got a lot of overall bench production, so credit to Payne. The other thing I would say is that their backup center minutes, in other words, when Ayton is not on the court, that's where it gets to be dicey. I mean, they play this the rookie from Maryland they drafted, and he was just basically kind of getting, you know, blown by, giving up layups, letting guys deep into the paint, getting really easy shots around the basket. And Luka was having a lot of success basically taking his man into the paint and getting these little, like, you know, 4 or 5 foot, you know, point blank shots, very consistently. So I think that's going to be an issue that Phoenix could potentially try to address by a trade. If I were them, I would feel like my roster right now is a piece short. I think they went out to try to grab Kaminsky. I'm not sure he's going to be the guy to really solve that problem. I think they need one more big back there to really kind of solidify things. But they also got great play from Mikal Bridges. He's another guy who kind of, you know, made a little bit of a jump in the bubble, I think, from a reputational standpoint. I mean, he really hit the ground running. First game was red hot from out and was very active and contributing in a lot of different ways.
He's Ben Golliver, Washington Post. I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz. So tonight I did call the Utah Jazz blowing out the Portland Trailblazers. Jazz led it by 7 after 1. They led by 21 at the half and 26 through 3. And, Ben, there's some interesting aspects. This first, Dame Lillard did not score in the first half, which is only the fourth time he's ever done that in his career. You know, obviously, Dame Lillard is so good. That's just a case of him having a tough night. But the other aspect of this was there's the two sides. One, Utah took 35 threes a game in the regular season. They went to the bubble, and they took 41 threes a game. They took 50 tonight.
I love it. Hey, I mean, it's Maury Ball in Utah, huh? You never thought you'd see it, just the super high-volume threes. You guys have a lot of shooters. I mean, that's part of it. I think, you know, Bogdanović, to me, stood out, you know, when I was looking back on the bubble as one of the biggest injury absences for almost any team. I mean, you also wonder, what would Denver look like if they had Will Barton? Maybe the Western Conference Finals would have been slightly different. And there's a few other guys here and there, but I see he got up 11, so that certainly contributed to the overall tally. But you've got all sorts of different guys who can shoot, and I like the idea that if your lead ball handler, a guy like, you know, Mitchell, who's going to be kind of the head of your snake, like, he can score in a lot of different ways, and the more threes he attempts, the more teams have to, you know, go out and defend him, the more he's going to be able to get stuff going to the basket and get into the free throw line. So I endorse the strategy. I like to see it. You know, I think some people have knocked the Jazz in recent years for not being the world's most entertaining team, especially a few years ago when they were really heavily slanted towards being a defensive-minded team. I think you look at this group, they can definitely be balanced, you know, both sides. And I've had them in my kind of second tier of Western Conference teams pretty much the whole offseason. You know, I'm expecting big things from them.
You talk about that they can shoot it. Here are the numbers. So last year, they had the number one catch-and-shoot team in the NBA. However, they were 23rd in catch-and-shoot attempts. Listen to these numbers. Ingles, 45%. Boyan, 43%. Mitchell, 43%. Conley, 42% on catch-and-shoot threes. Niang, 40% on catch-and-shoot threes. O'Neal, 40% on catch-and-shoot threes. Clarkson, 39% on catch-and-shoot threes. The seven guys that all take catch-and-shoot threes are above 39%. Last year they took 21 a game. Tonight they took 30. They actually only hit 13.
Well, people have made this whole argument of, well, Conley needs to step up, and if he's more like he was, you know, a couple of years ago, he could be the difference. Like, I'm more viewing it like, if Conley can keep the ball movement going to set up those kinds of shots and then step up and hit his opportunities when the ball swings to him, that's kind of what you need from him on offense. I don't think you need him to be this, like, pick-and-roll maestro, him and Marc Gasol doing the old two-man game from a couple of years ago, in part because I think he's gotten a little bit older and he's maybe not quite the same player, but really more about who is he playing with. You go back to those Memphis teams, they were always struggling to have you know, sources of offense. All the time, the wings couldn't shoot or they really couldn't create, so a lot fell on Conley's shoulders. I just view his role totally different in Utah, and I think if he can kind of settle into, like, it's not like he's a fourth option, right? But if you're just more of a complimentary scorer, if you score, great. If not, it's okay. Keep the ball moving and hit your shots. I think that's going to be all they need from him.
The Blazers are in a funky spot. Talking to Terry Stotts before the game, they were 27th in the league defensively. They're trying to change what they're doing defensively in a short training camp. They didn't look right at all. That's got to be a little concerning about where they are as a defensive group. They added Covington. They added Jones. It didn't feel as though that's a team that made any, you know, hey, we're only one night in, and Terry's one of the most underrated coaches in the league. But I didn't see a team that made some great strides with their defensive steps in the offseason.
You know, they didn't look ready in the preseason either. They got blown out a couple of times pretty good in the preseason. I would just note, Covington, new to their lineup. Derek Jones Jr., starter, new to their lineup. Nurkic was back in the bubble, but this is, you know, he missed all of last regular season prior to the bubble with injury, also a starter. Carmelo's in a new role off the bench for them. Rodney Hood's coming back from the Achilles. Enes Kanter is new to them. And Gary Trent Jr. is pretty much in the same role that he was last year. So you're looking at more than half of their playing rotation is either new this season or kind of playing in a new role or working back from an injury. So I think it's fair to be patient with the Blazers. At the same time, the defensive issues are going to be there. Robert Covington, as we saw in Houston, is like, one guy does not totally cover up all of your problems defensively, right? And so they're probably hoping they can get Zach Collins back at some point. Maybe he can help them with a little bit of rebounding and lineup versatility in the front court. But, you know, I look at their roster, they still feel a piece short to me. Like, is Derrick Jones Jr. a starting three in the Western Conference? I would say no. I mean, he was struggling to even crack the playoff rotation for the Miami Heat last year. So I feel like maybe that's going to be a weak link where they're feeling like, well, we made all these moves during the offseason, but we didn't quite cover every hole.
The Utah Jazz beat Portland by 20. The final game to look at tonight, Buddy Hield's tip-in after a missed Harrison Barnes dunk on a Nikola Jokic turnover. Again, we're not going to over. We got it's all we got, but that's a Sacramento's got to be pretty excited. They can beat Denver any night. They can get it. They got 21 from Barnes. They got 22 from Hield. They got 21 from Fox. They actually have a 9-man rotation they played last night that was pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a stunning game. I don't even know if they thought they had won it. If you watch Hield after he gets the tip and he just goes running off the court because he almost can't believe his eyes. What I would tell people to do, if you didn't get to see this game, just go back and watch De'Aaron Fox's block right before Buddy Hield's game winner. It will remind you exactly of a young John Wall. I know Fox got a lot of John Wall comps when he was coming up in high school and going to college at Kentucky. It is like, I mean, he just slams the ball from behind off the backboard like a chase down block style, but in the half court. It was like vintage 22-year-old John Wall. It was a beautiful thing to see.
How much is Denver going to miss Plumlee, Grant, and Craig?
Well, that's a good question because I do think that, Barton coming back helps them. They actually looked really good at times during the preseason, so I wouldn't be freaking out if I was a Nuggets fan off this one. But it is a lot of minutes. It is a lot of institutional knowledge. I think for them, you know, if you're watching how Jeremy Grant's been playing in Detroit in a totally different role with huge expectations, it's one of those situations where, like, if he wants to go chase that money and to, you know, chase that kind of a limelight, it's almost like, look, you know, you could hope that he would be the same guy he was for you during the bubble, but he obviously has a different view of his career, and so you really can't lose too much sleep over it. I mean, Grant's been terrible in Detroit. I mean, again, you know, trying to be a number one option just does not work. Their offense looks like such a mess when the ball is in his hands there. So I think from that standpoint, you know, don't cry over spilled milk, move on from Grant. And I think they're going to be all right. I think the story for Denver tonight was that, you know, Murray just didn't shoot the ball well, didn't play, you know, nearly as well as he did during the bubble. They need him to be a star to reach their full potential. And I think, they still are going to go through some inconsistent waves if he plays poorly. Very similar, by the way, to Damian Lillard with the Blazers. Like, it's no surprise if he plays poorly, they get blown out. He's kind of the bellwether. And same deal for Murray.
Five games on Christmas. What's your game you're most excited to watch?
Well, I'm planning to go to Lakers Mavericks, so it better be that one. It's a weird Christmas slate. I didn't love it this year. I hope that LeBron plays a little bit harder with more intensity than he did on Tuesday night with Luka being there. I think Luka's going to obviously, you know, try to take it to LeBron like he always does. The other ones that I'll be watching, probably the best game of the night, frankly, is Brooklyn-Boston. KD versus Tatum head-to-head. I mean, you're talking MVP conversation for Tatum. I'm sure some people came out of Brooklyn's opening win and felt like KD is now in that MVP conversation too. So, I think that's probably the best positional head-to-head matchup, either that or, LeBron versus Luka that we're going to get on Christmas.
Ben Golliver, thank you very much. We always appreciate it. It's Locked On NBA, running down the night before action, telling you what's going on in the league and recapping the night's action for you. Every day, Locked On NBA. Follow on iTunes, on Spotify. Subscribe on iTunes. Make it a part of your daily listen. Follow Ben Golliver at Ben Golliver and subscribe to his newsletter, Washington Post. Get it in your inbox every day. Ben, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Lock. Stay safe, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks. That is Ben Golliver. I'm David Locke. That is Locked On NBA. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On Bets.